It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, Dr. Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at mazingolake.com. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest. It's a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. Listeners, you know that we highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and all of the developments throughout our region, and we know there's so much to celebrate. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you're enjoying the summer and trust you took time to celebrate our nation's Independence Day, 242 years of celebration. I'm pleased to welcome you to the July edition of our show. We'll provide two segments, as we always do. In segment one, we feature Conception Abbey's ancient book collection with Brother Thomas Sullivan. In segment two, we feature Jessica Vest, the Missouri Employment Supervisor of the Year from Northwest Missouri State University, and Paula McLean. She's a human resource generalist and coordinates the Northwest Student Employment Program. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Brother Thomas Sullivan. Brother Sullivan, OSB, has been a monk of Conception Abbey since 1968. He earned a PhD in medieval history from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a Master's of Arts degree in library science at the University of Missouri-Columbia. Brother Sullivan has served on the staff of Conception Seminary College since 1997 as professor of history and humanities and the dean of studies and a librarian. At present, he is the special collections librarian at the Abbey, and his assignments in the seminary college include dean of studies, rare book librarian, and director of alumni. We'll learn that he's also obtained another title here recently as well. His research focuses on the intersection of monasticism and the medieval university, as well as the Faculty of Theology at the University of Paris in the 15th century. He has published three volumes of biographical registers useful for his prosopographical studies. Brother Sullivan, welcome to
Thank
All
you.
Things Northwest.
Glad to be.
It's great to have you here. And, you know, our listeners hear all of the bio information, and we have to talk about defining a rare book first for the library, knowing that not all books are rare, but they're certainly special. Let's talk about rare books.
The Abbey's rare books are really about 3,000 in number. They were sent by our mother house, Engelberg, as the basis of a library collection that in those times, since those times, has now numbers about 100,000 volumes. The Rare Books Room also is called Special Collections. Special Collections is the broader term, and that is for, we have like a collection of Fritz Eichenberg books that he illuminated. We also have books from Engelberg, our mother house in Switzerland. And the rare books are the incunabula or the incunables. And they're the most interesting at this point in the collection. Otherwise, we collect the books that monks have written. We collect odds and ends.
And we'll talk about those incunables in just a minute. But the collection, as you say, a variety of books in the collection. Maybe talk to our listeners about the interesting ways this collection has been acquired.
The collection got its beginning, as I said, from Engelberg Abbey, and they sent over the 3,000 books. Among the books sent were 25 incunables. That was a gift to begin our collection. It was like a seed library, and it's grown, as I said, to 100,000 volumes. The other part of the incunable collection, which is the rare or special books, was given by a local doctor who grew up in Humbert, or who lived in Humbert, which is about 10 miles from the monastery. He collected scientific treatises. We have probably 42 incunables titles, and maybe 56 or 57 volumes. About half of them came from Dr. Humbert, who was a very interesting person. He was just featured in an article in the St. Joe paper. He was especially interested in giants and did all kinds of work with giants. And if you read the article in the St. Joe paper, you'll find that it was he was a little iffy, but a very nice guy. He gave us his collection. He willed it to us when he died in the 60s. So we've added that. But his collection was all scientific treatises, though every once in a while he threw in a book that I think he thought would be interesting to the monks. So we're very grateful to him and grateful for the Mother House for sending over those volumes. There's recently an article published that discussed the gifts from Engelberg to Conception and to our Mother House to our sister house in Oregon, Mount Angel Abbey.
And brother, you just mentioned that every once in a while he would throw in a book that might have interest. All the books obviously have interest, right to the monks.
Yes.
But which ones, for example, really had particular interest to some of the monks?
There are two that stand out. The first is Nuremberg Chronicle, which was published in 1493. Makes it a late incunable by a pressman named Koberger. It was written by Hartmann Schedel, and there were over 1,000 woodblocks in there. So it's a special book not only because of its history, which is the history of the world according to scripture, at least that gave the framework for the history, but the illuminations you see all the time. There were, as I said, over 1,000. Used to be thought that Albrecht Dürer designed some of the pictures, but we find now that he was just an apprentice in Koberger's printing
shop.
And
that's right around the beginning of the printing press. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
Right.
Printing press was in 1453, and the incunables, and that's towards the end of it, the line, go to 1500. Incunable means that they're like the cradle or the swaddling clothes, the infancy of printing. And the incunables, the dates 1453 to 1500 are arbitrary. It's just the first shot out of the barrel. Our earliest one is from 1477, and our latest is from 1500.
And to reinforce for listeners of All Things Northwest, the countries that are represented in the collection?
Are Germany, Switzerland, Venice, and other parts of Italy. Venice produced the most editions of incunables. There had a very famous press called the Aldine Press. And we have one book that comes from that press. 1477 is an interesting date because scholars have suggested that in 1472, 1473, the output of printed books began to take over handwritten manuscripts. And so it's a pretty good shot there.
Well, as I think about the collection and its historical value to the foundation of Conception Abbey, how about kind of describe for our listeners how this helps give a glimpse into the beginnings of the Abbey?
It's very interesting. We've for years tried to figure out how did they choose the books they sent. By 1880, there were 3,000. and as I said, the incunables. The incunables are kind of ratty. And so you kind of think that these were leftovers. The other books in the collection from Engelberg are in good shape. We have large sets of scripture, canon law, ecclesiastical history, etc., things you would find in a religious house. And for us, they're more a contact with the mother house than anything we have ourselves. We have a chalice from Engelberg that we use once a year on Holy Thursday, and it ties us back to the mother house.
I'm reflective on, you know, going back to 1450, 1470, 1500, and of course going on to the beginnings of Conception Abbey. But as we think about inscriptions that help tell the stories of these books, are there some special inscriptions in the books that date back then?
Sometimes we have the owner's name or the donor's name. Sometimes we have the annotations in the margins that people who use the book made. We have one incunable that is a bunch of grammar texts put together, and they must have been used by monks because there's scribbles. Someone painted them with water color, and the name of the monk is in there from the 18th century. So you think, well, this was really used and useful. For us, it's locked up in a room.
Right.
For them, it must have been part of their library.
And as you work with the incunables, it's not every day you come across somebody that, you know, talks about a incunable bookbinder and the research from Scott Husby and, you know, the 15th century books and all of this. But as you work with incunables, you know, what led you to this work, and how do you describe to our listeners about working with such manuscripts?
Well, I'm a medievalist by training and studied the 15th century, so the fact that we had them made them attractive to me, that they were 15th century. Also, when you look at them as a historian, you can see what books were chosen to be printed, to have editions of. And there's a whole mixture of them, theological works, but also classical authors, which you're coming already into the Renaissance, so the revival of classical authors is important. They're old, so they're kind of cool to touch, and I have a novice who works with me, and it's kind of fun to see him getting more and more comfortable with these books. At first he was very ginger, but now he's kind of interested, and I try to teach him, well, this is what this means, this is what that means in the book. And they've held up pretty good for 600 years, so we're not too worried about touching them, but you know, you take ordinary precautions. But you can get your hands on something that is 15th century.
And talk about some of those precautions, because I you know, how do you walk in, and do you wear gloves, and you know, how do you?
That's a question everyone has, sure. And everyone thinks you're supposed to use gloves, mm-hmm. But we do not anymore, because the gloves make your fingers less precise in turning pages, so there's more chance of ripping a page, even though it's parchment and much stronger than old paper. So I have, if you wash your hands with soap and water, you're good for an hour before the oils from your hands begin to come back. No gloves, wash your hands.
Other precautions that you take?
We don't let lots of people in there at once, but generally it's behind locked doors, so that's about it.
And early on, when you say you've had your training to be a medievalist, what led you to that conclusion that you wanted to go and study and become a medievalist?
The year before I entered the monastery, I studied in Paris. My original aim was to study English literature, but when I got to Paris, it kind of swept everything away. I was literally, how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? Because it really grabbed my imagination. I was there in 1968 during the riots in May. And the history of the Republic of France and the like, these riots were student-led riots, but it was reflecting political history and economic history of France at that point.
Quite intriguing, and as you think about now today, working with this rare book collection, special books, what's special to the room with the incunables to you? What's most special?
The variety of topics in this room covered in these books that go from the 15th century up until the foundation. So you had 3,000 books of many different topics. For instance, if you know this, there's the Lives of the Saints, and we have three editions of this Lives of the Saints that came out. They did a month at a time, but it took them volume after volume. So you get a whole range of history, Christian history, Catholic history, monastic history as all. And the most modern thing we have in that room is what we call Hitler's Prayer Book.
Need to describe that a little bit.
Yes, yeah. There was a soldier who was fighting in Berlin who was the chauffeur of some general. The chauffeur and the general drove up to a meeting place very near the bunker where Hitler shot himself. The chauffeur was told to wait, and then the general or colonel said to him, you know, the bunker's still open. Why don't you go downstairs and pick something as a souvenir? So he took a book that looks like a prayer book, that doesn't look like it is a prayer book, and it has Hitler's book plate in it. How did we get it? The guy got the creeps, I think, having the book, and sent it to us thinking we could, I guess, overwhelm the creepiness of the book. It's quite interesting.
Fascinating. And as you think about the rare book room, you've kind of alluded to it. It is available to the public,
yes,
correct?
Yes. Right. We rarely have anyone ask, but if anyone wants to, they just need to contact me and can set up a time.
No gloves. Wash your hands, good for an hour, and not too many people all at once, correct?
And be nice to the books.
Be nice to the books, yes, indeed. And, brother, recently you've taken on a new position. It's not so new, perhaps. Maybe talk about that for our listeners of All Things Northwest.
I've been assigned by the abbot as dean of studies in our seminary. We have a very small seminary with about 75 students to 80 students, good kids, all training to be diocesan priests. And so the dean of studies is in charge of the curriculum and shuffling the faculty around and making sure all the necessary spots are full and trying to be a witness to the students of what integrity and scholarship means, and what a love of learning means. Years ago, there was a book written by a monk named Jean Leclerc at the beginning of the revival of monastic studies, and this book was called The Love of Learning and the Desire for God. And I thought that is the perfect motto for what we want to do in the seminary.
Brother Sullivan, anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about Conception Abbey and certainly this collection?
I think the most important thing to realize is that one of the missions of a Benedictine monastery is hospitality. And so we're always happy to welcome guests who want a tour of the basilica or a tour of the grounds, want to see the library. We encourage people to come. We're not Trappist monks. We're Benedictines. We're not lax, but we're more relaxed than the Trappists. And so we have parishes in the area, but we mainly run the seminary and the printing press. And if anyone's interested in coming for a visit, we'd be happy to welcome them.
Brother Thomas Sullivan, thank you for joining us on All Things Northwest.
My pleasure.
When we return to All Things Northwest, we'll visit with Paula McLean, Northwest's coordinator of the Student Employment Program and a Human Resources Generalist. We'll also visit with Jessica Vest, Missouri Employment Supervisor of the Year. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service, more at nottoway.biz. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at mazingolake.com.
Welcome back to the July edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Paula McLean and Jessica Vest. Paula McLean is a senior human resources generalist whose primary responsibility is to coordinate the Northwest Student Employment Program. She has administered the Student Employment Program since 2001. Paula led the development of the Career Pathing Program, which is a structured student employment development program that produces student employees with the opportunity for advancement, training, and development, as well as performance-based evaluations. Paula's had the honor of participating in an international collaboration with Birmingham City University as that institution began its development of a strategic student employment initiative. Since 2012, she has served as a regional and national student employment essentials trainer, providing specialized training for those new to the student employment field. Jessica Vest currently works as an archivist at the B.D. Owens Library right here on campus and oversees the library's special collections along with the university archives. Her duties also include managing the library's operational budgets and resources. Prior to her experience at Northwest, she worked for several National Archives and Records Administration branches in St. Louis and Kansas City. A Bearcat, she graduated from Northwest in 2007 with a degree in history and journalism. Paula McLean, Jessica Vest, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, let's start with you, Paula, and talk about the Student Employment Program. There's so much to talk about it, but for our listeners of All Things Northwest, high level, what's this program all about?
Okay. Well, the Student Employment Program provides our students here at Northwest with educational employment opportunities. It also helps prepare them, foster their career development, and assist them in making college affordable for them. It prepares them for their future. To work on campus, our students have to be enrolled in at least 6 credit hours, and our students can work up to a maximum of 20 hours when they're enrolled in classes. But on average, most students will stay around 10 hours a week. They make up for a huge amount of the workforce that if we didn't have them, we'd have to go out and hire approximately 230 full-time employees. They're a large population on our campus, and we rely on them.
And how many students do we have employed, and what kinds of positions?
We have approximately 950 student employees that work in the fall and spring trimesters in about 1,200 positions. So some of our positions are seasonal, and so they will have more than one position, and therefore that's why we have 950 student employees in 1,200 positions. Some are working multiple positions. They work in every area on campus. They can be office assistants in our academic and support areas, and about a third of our positions are office assistant positions. But we also rely on them in positions like dispatchers for the University Police Department. They work on the farm, taking care of the livestock and maintenance on the farm here at Northwest. They could be tutors for academic areas. They build our websites. They take care of radio broadcasting as we're here today. So we heavily rely on our student employees here.
And I assume other universities have a student employment program, may not call it that, but what makes ours unique?
Well, we have a special program here at Northwest called the Career Pathing Program. And the Career Pathing Program allows our student employees to get personal and professional development while they're here and an opportunity for wage advancement. While also they participate in the program, they can have performance feedback. So it really prepares them for their future, but also enhances that affordability piece for our students as well.
And we'll come back and talk about that student feedback and the oversight thereof in just a moment. Let me ask, though, the benefit of student employment. You've alluded to a few of the elements, but if I'm a parent, if I'm a student, if I'm a prospective parent or student, what are the benefits?
Well, definitely the students that work on campus have the benefit of, you have time management. You know, the research shows that it helps with retention with students. It does make college more affordable. Our students can come and go on campus to a job and to class and never leave. And that helps them with that time management component. That helps with keeping them engaged with the university. There's so many benefits, and obviously it's a valuable asset to Northwest, but many times this is the first time they've ever worked. So it's really preparing them, giving them that experience. This is what a job is. We're going to prepare you through an application process, through an interview process and the hiring process, and then we're going to give you on-the-job training and that experience you need to hopefully be successful in your career.
And you mentioned the benefits to Northwest. Maybe describe those.
Well, definitely, as I mentioned earlier, we can't survive without our student employees. We rely on them. They outnumber us from full-time employees to student employment population. And, you know, we would be devastated without our student employment population. As I said, we'd have to go out and hire 230 full-time employees to replace them. But it really enhances that university community and our university family. I mean, these are the employees that are the bridge to those we serve. So they provide our Northwest employees with the window to familiarize ourselves with our students.
Interestingly, I'm looking across the studio to a student employee, our student producer, Austin Hall. And so thank you, Austin. I'll just give you a wave over there, but thanks for being part of that student employment program. Paula, as we think about the student employment program, and you have been the oversight to that for quite some time now, you also have had a chance to come in contact with student employment supervisors. Maybe talk about their role first of all.
Absolutely. You know, really our student employee supervisors on campus are mentors or coaches for our student employees. They're a very valuable asset to the program. If we didn't have them helping to develop our student employees, then we wouldn't be successful in the program. You know, we try to acknowledge our student employment supervisors and recognize when we have outstanding supervisors on this campus as well as our student employees, because their contributions are priceless. And the supervisors take great time to nurture our student employees. You know, they are there to talk to them about their academic success, and they can recognize if their struggles and get them to the right resources so they can be successful not only academically but professionally.
What makes a good, a great supervisor, student employment supervisor?
I really feel like those that are outstanding are those that take the time to build relationships with their student employees, take the time to recognize what skills our students have and what the areas they need to develop and where their improvement areas of improvement are, so that they can help build them and prepare them for their careers, and just giving them the opportunity to experience life skills as far as employment skills and those soft skills, you know what it's like to be a part of a team, realizing communication is important, professionalism is important. And so I think that's really key as a supervisor. If you take the time and you build your student employees' skills, they're going to be successful. And if you take the time to build a relationship, that student's going to want to grow and want to develop in that position.
So very well described, Paula. And in a few minutes, I'll come back and ask you about your assessment of Jessica Vest as a supervisor. I think I already know the answer of that. But let me transition to Jessica Vest. Jessica, maybe for our listeners of All Things Northwest on KIG, CB Maryville, Karen, W. Chillicothe, could you tell us a little bit about your job at Northwest?
Sure. So my title is archivist, but I work for the BD Owens Library Unit on campus. So a part of my job is a little bit like an office manager for the library. We're ordering supplies, managing the operations budgets, that sort of thing, assisting with the staff, projects that pop up over the years. And then obviously the other part of my job is managing the university archives, which here at Northwest we have 113 years of university history, if I've done my math correctly there. So those are, that collection really varies from university photographs, memorabilia, documents, that sort of thing. And then we also have four special collections within the library that I'm also in charge of managing. So it's a little bit of an interdisciplinary role, I guess you would say, with the library. And we end up working with a lot of different departments on campus.
Well, we so much appreciate Paula's work and Jessica's work. But Jessica, as you think about student employees, what types of student employees do you oversee? And what type of work do they do and provide to the institution?
Yeah, so I oversee an office assistant that works with kind of our administrative wing of the library. I also occasionally interact with our students that work at the front desk. So if you would come into the library, check out an item, that sort of thing. We have students that man our library services desk. And then I also kind of help with a campus museum attendant that we've established within the last year. And that student provides hours at the various campus museums that are scattered across the campus, and there are all sorts of different collections there. And the other part of my job is actually managing, we have a public history museum studies minor, and as part of that minor, they have to fulfill a internship credit. So within the last year, I think in 2017, I had a total of 11 student employees and interns. So all of them very different and interesting and for the most part, pretty wonderful to work with. So,
and I have to hearken back. You mentioned the university museums. How many museums do we have?
I believe a total of five.
Okay. So, our listeners, as you think about it, we're amidst one right here with the broadcast, the Warren Stuckey Broadcast Museum. But there's several museums around campus that we would love for people to partake in. So, as we think about Jessica, the benefits that you have experienced in overseeing student employees, maybe talk about those.
Sure. I'll echo Paula's statements. I wouldn't be able to tackle half the projects that we've had to take on within the last few years without our student employees. They are just wonderful assets for us in the library. Our students have done everything, obviously, from ordering supplies, and occasionally, you know, I've had a finance major work for me where they help manage our operations budgets. The interns obviously do a lot of hands-on work with university archives and special collections. And like I kind of said before, that it's really an interdisciplinary role. So some days we're working with fine and performing arts. Some days we're working with athletics. Some days we may be working with alumni and foundation. And so those students all bring their past experience and education to that job, which obviously then we tap into. And in some cases they've helped establish and build web pages and add to our website, develop our social media and that sort of thing.
So there's significant professional development that they receive in doing these sorts of jobs, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
And Paula, as we think about student employment supervisors, you've seen so many over the years, and we've had so many great supervisors. We do today, and in fact, we have received some of those statewide recognitions over the years, but maybe talk about the Missouri Employment Supervisor of the Year program, because as we talk about Jessica being accorded that award, let's set the stage for that.
Absolutely. So each year we recognize our student employees and supervisors here on campus. National Student Employment Week is always in April, and so we take time in April to have an awards ceremony and also an appreciation event. So at that period in time, we allow our supervisors to nominate student employees, and our student employees nominate supervisors for recognition for the awards ceremony. And so every year we do identify a Student Employee of the Year and a Student Employment Supervisor of the Year, and then we have various other awards. And National Student Employment Association allows for us to submit nominations on a state, regional, and national level for student employees. So we've participated in that program for 20 years, and of that 20 years, 9 times our student employees have walked away with the honor of State of Missouri Student Employee of the Year.
I want to make sure I just repeat that real quick. 9 times in the last 20 years,
yes.
Northwest, any institution, public and private, just
correct.
Public?
What, yep, any
both.
Institution can nominate their student employees for this honor on a regional and national level. It's national. So definitely any institution that has a membership with the National mm-hmm. Student Employment Association, and they have a very high membership level, could definitely submit those nominees. Okay. So we're very proud of our student employees for those honors they've received. We also do it for our student employment supervisors. There is not a national award for Student Employment Supervisor of the Year yet. We launched a regional when I was involved with the Midwest Association of Student Employment Administrators 4 years ago. And recognizing that student employment supervisors contribute just as much, and we need to recognize those contributions. And so we've submitted our Northwest Student Employment Supervisor of the Year for the last 4 years, and our supervisors have walked away with State of Missouri Student Employment Supervisor of the Year all 4 years.
Four for four.
Yeah.
That's great. So let's talk about Jessica. As you've looked at and observed so many supervisors over the years, and of course the last four, how does Jessica stand apart?
Well, I think some of those things I mentioned earlier that really make a student employment supervisor outstanding.
We can talk about Jessica right
yep.
in front of
yeah,
Jessica,
absolutely.
Right? Okay, I want to make sure of that. So.
And I think the key thing with Jessica is that she follows all those things. She takes the time to build those relationships with her students, understand what's important to them. You know, as she mentioned, it's interdisciplinary position. So identifying, you know, what a student's profession-based learning needs to be and matching that up with the jobs that she needs to accomplish. And she takes the time to make that connection and make sure that they get those skills while they're working in the position.
And Jessica, how did you learn that you were named the Missouri Employment Supervisor of the Year? Talk about the experience. Talk about the feelings that you were going through and so on.
I can honestly say I was surprised to even win it at the Northwest level, seeing who else was nominated. So I was kind of shocked at that award ceremony. And then I was told that I was supposed to go pull something from our archives vault, actually. And then I realized there was a staff council meeting happening on the second floor of the library that day, and there was a whole lot of people in the building that I did not realize. So it was kind of a surprise ceremony and announcement. I was obviously very shocked and excited, obviously, and very honored, because I know there are so many good student employee supervisors across campus and likely across the state of Missouri.
When we all received the call from Paul to say, this is a surprise, let's all walk over to the library and let's celebrate Jessica. It was a grand plan, and it was great to celebrate that day, but we don't just celebrate that day, right? So your work yeah. continues. So what's next for you, Jessica, as you think about student employees and supervising them?
So we have a couple of big projects coming up this fall. We're very lucky in that Dr. Alyssa Ford with the Department of Humanities and Social Sciences wrote and was awarded a Missouri Humanities Grant to bring a traveling Smithsonian exhibit to the Nottoway County Historical Society and Museum. So what we've been doing with the University Archives, the exhibit is called Hometown Teams, How Sports Shape America. So obviously this is kind of tailor-made for Maryville, Missouri, and especially for Northwest Missouri State. For the last year, my student interns and to some degree my student employees have been helping create companion displays that will go up across campus. They'll be set up in September in BD Owens Library, the Alumni House, and Volk. So visitors to campus or students can see those that will be highlighting university athletic history, but also the history of like our marching band, our cheerleaders, the steppers, that sort of thing. So we're really excited. Our students don't often get hands-on experience with something like a Smithsonian level display, but Dr. Ford's class will be taking that on, and they'll be handling a professional installation of that display down at the museum in town. So it's a really nice relationship there.
And when can the visitors see the display?
So it will be up October 12th through December 2nd. Admission will be free, and we're encouraging all alumni and Bearcat fans to obviously stop by and check that out, but also come to campus. If they are interested in learning more, they can go to our website. It's hosted at nwmissouri.edu/hometownteams, and we'll be collecting stories from alumni and fans to add to our oral history collections through the university archives with our student employees, obviously.
Something for all listeners of All Things Northwest to look forward to here come the fall. Jessica, congratulations on receiving statewide award and campus recognition, the statewide award, and for what you do in terms of our student employees. Thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you.
Paula McLean, closing question, affordability. A lot of people talk about it within higher education, but as we think about higher education, student employment program, the awesome work that the Jessicas of the world do with regard to supervising, obviously there's an affordability component to the student employment program. Maybe talk about that in closing.
Okay. Well, our students, as I mentioned earlier, can work 20 hours a week maximum in their position. So if we have a student that comes in and works 20 hours a week in a minimum wage position during the fall and spring trimester, they could earn a total of a little more than $5,000 annually. The career pathing program offers them the opportunity to get a 25-cent annual increase. And so if our student employees take advantage of that, it enhances that affordability. So if, for instance, we had a student employee that were to in a position starting out as a freshman, worked every minute they could fall, spring, and summer, at a minimum wage position and participated in career pathing and earned the wage increases each year, they could potentially accumulate to over $42,000 in a four-year period. Now, that's a lot of money, I think we'd all agree, but realistically, most students won't work that much, but even if we cut it in half, $21,000 is an exceptional amount towards tuition, and so I think that speaks volumes for the students that are participating in the program and are involved in student employment on campus here.
Affordability, profession-based learning, learning from supervisors, a wonderful program. Paula McLean, thank you, too, for what you do as a human resources generalist, but also overseeing our student employment program.
Thank you.
Jessica Best, Paula McLean, thank you for joining All Things Northwest. We're so appreciative of the work that you do. And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests here for the July edition, Brother Thomas Sullivan, Paula McLean, and Jessica Vest. Thanks, too, to our producer, Austin Hall, a student right here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV General Manager Rodney Harris. Friends, we here at Northwest focus on student success. Thanks for assisting us in enhancing our focus on students through your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV KRNW, and public radio. Be a Bearcat, ladies and gentlemen. Learn, connect, care, practice civility, and show pride in Northwest, KXCV KRNW, and public radio. I'm John Chasinski. Take good care and keep celebrating and advancing our region.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from the City of Maryville and Nottoway County Economic Development. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest Professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by Vocal Music Education major Jordan Andrews, piano, Music major Daniel Bates, bass, Audio and Production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by sports media major Austin Hall. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.